Welcome to the deep dive.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, of course. So the core mission today, like as it always is when we sit down at these microphones, is to take the source material you've shared with us, aggressively extract the insights, and give you a shortcut to being comprehensively well-informed.
Right.
We try to skip the noise, look for the signal, and really try to find those aha moments that actually change how you think about a subject.
And, you know, today's source material forces us to look for the signal in a place we rarely have to search.
Yeah.
Which is complete silence.
Man, I am still wrapping my head around this one. Because when the document arrived, the cover sheet promised something, like, incredibly compelling.
It really did.
The title is, quote, Excerpts from the Psychology of Successful Investors.
Right.
And I mean, for anyone who spends time analyzing markets or allocating capital or just, you know, trying to navigate their own financial future, a title like that is kind of the holy grail.
Oh, absolutely. You expect a dense, highly curated selection of behavioral analysis.
Yeah.
Maybe some proprietary data on market panic or at least a framework for decision making under pressure.
You definitely anticipate a structured transfer of knowledge, right?
Yeah.
Like you are preparing to consume an author's thesis.
Supported by evidence, case studies, historical market data, all of that.
So I have my notebook open. I've got my pen ready. I flip past the cover sheet. And
there's nothing.
Nothing. There's absolutely nothing. The fascinating, I mean, almost absurd reality of today's source material is that the only text provided in the entire excerpt is the title itself.
Just repeating at the top of the page.
Yeah. The Psychology of Successful Investors.
Hell.
And beyond that, completely, utterly blank pages.
Endless white space.
Endless. It's wild.
It immediately confronts the reader with a profound absence, you know.
It's like showing up for a 5-course meal and being handed a menu that just says food.
That's a great way to put it.
Right. Okay, so let's unpack this, because what do we do when the source is literally just the title? My first instinct, honestly, is that somebody simply forgot to attach the PDF.
Here.
Like, my instinct is that this is just a clerical error, a misprint, and we are sitting here staring at a mistake.
I completely understand that instinct. But treating it as a mere mistake sort of ignores the phenomenological impact it has on whoever is holding it.
The phenomenological impact. Okay, break that down for me.
Well, even if we assume a printing error, we are still left with a mere title that provides a foundational thesis, right?
Okay, yeah.
The juxtaposition of those specific words at the top of an empty page, it creates a boundary.
A boundary.
Exactly. It establishes immediately that we are looking at the intersection of human behavior and financial markets. It frames the perimeter of the discussion, even if it refuses to fill the interior.
Okay, I see your point. But, you know, a boundary without a map isn't a lot of help to someone trying to navigate.
That's fair.
Let's look at the boundary itself, though, because that title is doing a massive amount of heavy lifting. The Psychology of Successful Investors.
It explicitly links three distinct concepts.
Right. It's not the math of successful investors.
Or the economics of successful investors.
Right. So what's fascinating here is, well, this title explicitly signals a departure from purely analytical, mathematical, or economic approaches to wealth accumulation.
Yes. By centering psychology as the primary operative word, the text asserts that cognitive and behavioral factors are the true variables in financial outcomes.
Yeah.
It implies that the mechanics of investing, you know, the valuation models, the discounted cash flows, the asset allocation algorithms.
The stuff everyone obsesses over.
Exactly. It implies all of that is merely table stakes.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me. Because if the secret to investing was purely about crunching numbers, every calculator would be a billionaire.
Every smartphone would own a private island.
Exactly. We know the math. Anyone listening to this deep dive right now understands compounding, they understand diversification, they understand beta.
The quantitative side of the equation has been largely democratized.
It totally has.
Mm-hmm.
The title alone tells us the real battleground isn't in this spreadsheet. It's inside our own heads.
I would actually argue it goes even deeper than identifying a battleground.
Oh, really? How so?
Well, the title suggests a fundamental asymmetry in how we attribute success.
Okay.
Think about it. When a portfolio outperforms, the industry instinct is to attribute that success to superior information.
Or faster execution.
Right. Or a more robust analytical model. But the title rejects that premise entirely.
It does, yeah.
It posits that the ultimate differentiator, the element that separates an outcome of wealth from an outcome of ruin, is the internal state of the individual executing the strategy.
Okay, let me push back on that a bit, because you can't just psychology your way out of buying a fundamentally broken asset.
Well, no, of course not.
Right. Like, I can have the strongest, most resilient mindset in the world, but if I'm holding equity in a company that is structurally failing, my psychology isn't going to save my capital.
It's true.
The math still dictates the reality. Right.
That assumes the psychology and the math operate in isolation, though. And they don't.
Okay, explain that.
A resilient psychology wouldn't allow you to hold that structurally failing asset to zero in the first place. Or at the very least, it would have dictated a sizing strategy where the total loss of that single asset was mathematically irrelevant to the broader portfolio.
Right. So the psychology governs the implementation of the math.
Precisely. The math is the engine. Psychology is the steering wheel and the brakes.
I love that analogy.
A brilliant engine is useless and, frankly, often dangerous if the driver cannot perceive the cliff edge because they are blinded by their own panic or greed.
Okay, I'll grant you that. The driver matters more than the engine in a volatile environment. But that brings us to the second word in the triad, successful.
Yes.
If the psychology is the steering wheel, what does it mean to steer successfully? Because for a lot of people operating in markets, success is defined by alpha.
Beating the market.
Exactly. It's defined by outperforming a benchmark or achieving a specific internal rate of return.
The pairing of psychology and successful creates this really deliberate tension. Well, if the document had been titled The Psychology of Investing, it would merely imply a descriptive study.
Like just observing what people do.
Exactly. It would just be an observation of how humans act around money. But by injecting the word successful, it shifts from descriptive to prescriptive.
It claims there is an optimal state of mind.
Right.
But wait, without the text, we don't know what that optimal state is. We're just left guessing at the definition of success.
I actually disagree with that.
Really?
Yeah. I think the absence of the text is what forces us to reconsider the definition itself.
Okay, I'm listening.
If the pages were full, they would likely hand you a metric. They would say, you know, success is an 8% annualized return over 2 decades.
Right, a hard number.
But the blank page strips away the external metric. It implies that success in investing might not be universally quantifiable.
Wow. Okay.
It suggests that success is the alignment of an individual's financial strategy with their unique psychological capacity for uncertainty.
Man, that's a highly subjective definition of success, though.
It is.
Like, if I put my money in a mattress, I might be perfectly aligned with my psychological capacity for uncertainty.
Which would be zero.
Right. Exactly zero. But my purchasing power is going to get absolutely destroyed by inflation. I wouldn't exactly call that successful investing.
And that is exactly what I mean by the final word in the title, investors.
Ah.
That word carries its own constraints. A person stuffing cash in a mattress isn't an investor.
No, they're a hoarder.
Right. And a person day trading options based on a social media sentiment algorithm isn't an investor either.
So you're touching on a really crucial semantic distinction here.
Yeah, the title does not say the psychology of successful traders or the psychology of successful speculators.
Right. The term investor implies a specific orientation toward time.
Exactly. Time is the key variable.
An investor commits capital to an enterprise with the expectation of a return derived from the fundamental value creation of that enterprise over a long horizon.
Their time horizon is the defining characteristic. They aren't trying to predict the price of an asset tomorrow. They were trying to participate in the yield of an asset over a decade.
And that extended time horizon fundamentally changes the psychological requirements.
How so? Like, what's the difference in mindset?
Well, think about a trader. A trader needs the psychology of a combatant.
Right, like hypervigilant.
Hypervigilant, reactive, constantly looking for an immediate edge in the order book.
It sounds exhausting.
It is. But an investor requires a psychology of endurance.
Endurance. That's a great word for it.
They must possess the capacity to absorb prolonged periods of cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, like when the market drops for no reason.
Exactly. They have to watch the market price of their asset disconnect wildly from their assessment of its fundamental value, sometimes for years, and do absolutely nothing.
And doing nothing is arguably the most unnatural psychological state for a human being under stress.
Oh, without a doubt.
I mean, we have a profound bias toward action. When a portfolio is in a steep drawdown, the urge to intervene, you know, to stop the bleeding, to fix it.
It's overwhelming.
It's totally overwhelming.
And it is entirely counterintuitive to everything else we do. In almost every other domain of human endeavor, taking aggressive, corrective action when a system is failing is the correct response.
Right. If my car engine is making a strange noise, I pull over and fix it.
You don't just keep driving and hope the fundamental value of the car remains intact.
No, you'd crash.
But in investing, the market's pricing mechanism is this noisy, chaotic environment.
Mm.
It actively generates false signals designed to shake out weak conviction.
So the premise contained purely in the title is that the psychology of successful investors is essentially the psychology of inaction.
That's a brilliant way to phrase it.
It's the ability to tolerate the pain of a drawdown without violating your initial thesis.
It is the ability to decouple your emotional state from the real-time pricing of your assets.
Decoupling. I want to focus on this idea of decoupling because it brings us right back to the central mystery of our source material.
In blank pages.
Yes. We spent all this time dissecting the title, but we have to confront the silence of the excerpts themselves. Right.
The document sets a clear expectation of excerpts. Plural.
It promises a curated selection of knowledge.
Presumably to teach us how to achieve this state of decoupling.
Yes.
And instead, it delivers a massive echoing white space.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, you know, the absence of text in this document functions as a brutal intellectual mirror.
An intellectual mirror.
It challenges the fundamental assumption of how we acquire financial acumen in the first place.
Okay, so what does this all mean for the person listening right now?
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, you tune into a deep dive for actionable advice. You want a framework.
Sure.
Are you suggesting that the blank pages imply the psychology of investing is something you just have to experience and self-regulate rather than just read about in an excerpt?
Not exactly.
Because, I mean, that feels a little like saying the secret to swimming is just to get in the water and not drown.
Right.
It's true, but it's not particularly helpful to someone standing on the diving board. It's definitely more nuanced than just get in the water. Think about the relationship between an author and a reader in traditional financial literature.
Okay.
The author provides a framework, right? A set of rules, a historical backtest.
Yeah, all the charts and graphs.
And the reader consumes this data and feels a sense of borrowed confidence.
Borrowed confidence. I like that.
The reader believes that because they possess the data, they somehow possess the psychology.
Which is a massive illusion.
A total illusion.
Knowing that the market historically recovers from drawdowns doesn't stop your stomach from dropping when you see your net worth fall by 30% in a week.
Exactly. And the blank page forces the realization of that illusion.
Oh, I see.
When you look at an empty page expecting instructions, your immediate internal reaction is the truest indicator of your psychological state.
Oh, wow. So it's like a test.
It is.
Right.
Do you feel frustrated that no one is telling you what to do? Do you feel anxious without a formula to rely on?
That makes a lot of sense. The document isn't withholding information. It is stripping away the crutch of external validation.
Precisely. It forces you to recognize that your conviction cannot be borrowed from a book.
It have to be generated internally.
It must be.
Okay, but let me challenge that interpretation for a second.
Please do.
I understand the philosophical beauty of the intellectual mirror, but markets are complex adaptive systems, right?
They are.
They are driven by macroeconomic forces, monetary policy, global capital flows. You can't just meditate your way to understanding liquidity dynamics.
No, you can't.
So isn't it kind of irresponsible to suggest that looking inward at a blank page is more valuable than studying the actual mechanics of the financial system?
Well, I am not suggesting that the mechanics are irrelevant. The mechanical understanding is the prerequisite.
Okay.
You absolutely must understand what you own and why you own it.
Right.
However, the source material focuses on the psychology of the investor, not the mechanics of the market.
Ah! Cool.
And in that specific domain, studying more external data often becomes a liability.
Wait, how does data become a liability? That seems backwards.
Because the financial data stream is infinite.
Yeah, that's true.
And it is largely optimized for engagement, which means it is optimized to trigger fear or greed.
Oh, right. The news is always either the sky is falling or you're missing out on the biggest rally of the century.
Exactly. So if you view investing purely as an external analytical game, every piece of macroeconomic news, every central bank announcement, every geopolitical shift demands a reaction.
You're just constantly recalibrating.
Constantly. Your conviction becomes entirely dependent on the last article you read.
You become a leaf blowing in the wind of the news cycle.
That's a perfect metaphor. And the blank page is an interruption of that cycle.
It's an invitation to information fasting.
Yes, information fasting. It proposes that the critical variable is not your ability to parse tomorrow's inflation data faster than the market, but your ability to sit in a room with a blank piece of paper and remain completely unbothered by the fact that you do not know tomorrow's inflation data.
Man, that requires an incredible amount of intellectual humility.
It really does.
You have to be willing to look at the blank page and say, I have no idea what is going to happen next, and my strategy does not require me to know.
That is the core psychological shift right there.
Yeah.
The unsuccessful investor seeks certainty in the text. They want the excerpts to tell them the future.
They want the crystal ball.
Exactly. But the successful investor recognizes that the text is blank because the future is unwritten. Their psychology is built to survive uncertainty, not to predict it.
Okay. If we accept this premise, that the blankness is a feature, not a bug, and that it forces us inward.
Right.
How do we actually operationalize it?
What do you mean?
I mean, if I am a listener holding this document, staring at the phrase, the psychology of successful investors and a sea of white space, what am I supposed to actually do with it?
You have to view the blank space as a designated area for your own pre-commitment strategy.
A pre-commitment strategy.
Yes. The text is blank because you are the only one who can write the rules of your own behavioral boundaries.
Oh, I love that. So we turn it from an intellectual mirror into a self-authored manual.
Exactly.
I really like that. But what does a pre-commitment strategy look like without relying on the very external data we just talked about discarding?
Well, a pre-commitment strategy isn't about predicting the market. It's about predicting yourself.
Predicting yourself.
It is a set of hard rules forged in a period of low emotional arousal, designed to bind your hands during periods of high emotional arousal.
So instead of trying to write down what the S&P 500 will do, you write down what you will do when the S&P 500 drops 20%.
Precisely. You codify your reaction to extreme variance before the variance occurs.
Yeah.
The psychology of the successful investor requires the recognition that you are essentially two different people.
Okay, two people.
Yes. The rational planner in a calm market and the irrational actor in a chaotic market.
Oh, that makes so much sense. I am definitely two different people depending on what my portfolio is doing.
We all are. The blank pages are for the rational planner to write a binding contract for the irrational actor.
I can see how that changes the dynamic entirely. If you haven't written anything on those blank pages, then when the chaos hits, you are just improvising.
And improvising with capital when your stress hormones are spiking is a guaranteed recipe for wealth destruction.
Improvisation in investing is just another word for panic, isn't it?
It absolutely is. The blank pages demand that you define the parameters of your own panic.
Right.
You have to articulate your pain threshold.
Okay, let's talk about defining that threshold, because I don't think it's as simple as just picking a number out of thin air.
No, it really is.
Someone might write on their blank page, I will not sell unless the market drops 30%.
Sure.
But when they actually hit down 29%, the psychological agony is so intense they break their own rule. So how do you write a rule on a blank page that you will actually follow when things get ugly?
You have to tie the rule to a fundamental truth about your own life, not an arbitrary market metric.
Oh, interesting. Give me an example.
Well, the rule cannot just be about the price of the asset. It must be about the purpose of the capital.
The purpose of the capital.
Exactly. If the capital is intended to fund a retirement that is three decades away,
okay,
the rule written on the blank page must be something like, price volatility in the present decade has no bearing on the utility of this capital in the fourth decade.
Therefore, I am indifferent to current pricing.
Exactly.
Man, that's powerful. It's an anchor. It anchors the psychology to a reality that exists outside the market's pricing mechanism entirely.
Because the market's pricing mechanism is ultimately a distraction from the fundamental utility of your capital.
Yeah.
If you don't define that utility clearly on your own blank page, the market will dictate the utility for you.
And it will usually do so at the worst possible moment.
Without fail.
This really forces a confrontation with the concept of enough, doesn't it?
It does, very much so.
If the blank page requires you to define the purpose of your capital, you eventually have to define the finish line.
And that is arguably the most daunting task for any investor.
Oh, absolutely.
It is a purely psychological exercise because the market will never tell you that you have enough.
Never. The industry is practically designed to perpetually move the goalposts.
There's always a more complex strategy, right? A higher yield, a new asset class to conquer.
The default setting of the financial world is accumulation without end. It operates on this assumption of infinite desire.
And the psychology of the successful investor requires a firewall against infinite desire.
A firewall.
Yes. If you do not write down your definition of enough on that blank page, your psychology will be continually destabilized by the success of others.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You will take on uncompensated risk, not because your financial plan requires it, but because your ego demands it relative to a benchmark or a peer.
Which means the blank page is also a shield against envy.
It's exactly.
I mean, in a world of ubiquitous financial transparency, where everyone is broadcasting their winning trades and their outsized returns on social media.
Yes, the constant noise.
The blank page is kind of a private sanctuary. It's the one place where external comparisons just don't exist.
It's just you and your own definition of success.
Right.
It isolates the variables that actually matter. It enforces the reality that the only benchmark of consequence is whether your portfolio allows you to live the life you have defined for yourself.
On your own terms.
On your own terms, exactly.
Man, we started this analysis looking at a document that, on its face, felt like a practical joke.
Or a massive error.
Right. A title page followed by literally nothing. But by treating the absence of text as a deliberate feature rather than a bug, we've extracted a rather profound thesis here.
The absence of text really is the ultimate distillation of the subject matter.
It is.
To master the psychology of investing, you must eventually discard the noise of external opinions and confront the silent reality of your own decision-making framework.
We've really moved from the expectation of consuming knowledge to the necessity of generating it.
Right.
The title, The Psychology of Successful Investors, acts as the prompt.
A very powerful prompt.
It forces us to acknowledge that the math is subordinate to the mind and that endurance is way more valuable than prediction.
And we recognize that the blank space serves as a diagnostic tool.
Diagnostic, yeah.
Your initial reaction to the lack of instruction reveals your dependence on external certainty in an inherently uncertain environment.
Right. And from there, we treated the blank pages as a self-authored manual.
Exactly. A space to establish pre-commitment strategies.
To define personal pain thresholds.
And to codify the concept of enough, really, to protect against the endless treadmill of accumulation.
Knowledge in this domain is completely inert until it is tested by volatility.
It really is. The blank pages represent that void.
Yeah.
They represent the unknown future where your theories about your own risk tolerance will actually be put to the test.
So, to everyone listening, I want to leave you with a final provocative thought to carry with you today.
Yeah.
We spend so much time searching for the perfect excerpt, the perfect article, the perfect piece of data that will finally make us feel secure in our financial decisions.
We all do it.
But since the pages of The Psychology of Successful Investors provided to us are completely blank, it really begs a critical question about your own internal state.
It does.
How much of your own emotional baggage, your hidden biases, and your unexamined fears are you projecting onto those blank pages right now?
That's the real question.
If you had to fill that first empty page based strictly on how you behave when the market moves against you.
Or how you wish you behaved.
Right. Not the ideal version of you, but how you actually behave. What would that chapter reveal about your true strategy?
Would it reveal an investor operating with a defined purpose or a mind held hostage by the daily fluctuations of price?
The answer isn't in any source material we can provide. It's entirely up to you to write it.
That's exactly right.
Thank you for joining us on this incredibly unique exploration. We really hope this deep dive has challenged your assumptions and given you a new framework for navigating not just the markets, but your own mind.
It's been a great conversation.
Keep looking for those unexpected insights and never be afraid to question the premise of the information or, you know, the lack thereof put in front of you.
Until next time, focus on your framework and manage your psychology.
Take care, everyone.